Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and let's get into it. This week's guest is Harper Ross, writer of The Unwritten Rules of Magic. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So tell me, where did you grow up, and how were your early years?
I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, actually. So my early years were rooted in Midwestern values and sports. I wish our Steelers were doing better, but they used to be good when I was a child. But I had a pretty typical upbringing, in doing all the normal things that kids do in the city of Pittsburgh. And that's it. My parents divorced. I had that. But I got married a little later in life in my 30s, and my husband brought me up here to Connecticut. So that's how I wound up.
In your early years, did you know you were a writer?
I kind of did, but not for novels. When I was a teenager, I used to fantasize about writing for television movies. I loved like dramatic shows, and before fan fiction was like a thing, I used to imagine, if I were on this show, I would have had them say this, or I would have had a lot go that way, So I was really more thinking in those terms, but my parents were very practical and steered me to law and business. So I ended up going to college and grad school and getting a law degree and an MBA, and worked as a commercial attorney for the first 10 years of my adult life.
Wow. How was that experience? And, sometimes we have to push back our creative spirit in order to follow what we think is the right thing. How was that for you?
Well, it was fine one way, because it was sort of an expected path. It was a safe path. Because I just mentioned my parents are divorced, and both, were familiar with how difficult that can be, and they wanted me in a secure profession that would not leave me trapped in a bad marriage should I have made a bad choice or something like that. So their rationale sounded good, and I didn't know myself well enough. I was, so I was easily persuaded to do what they made sense. And it was really only after I had children and my children were in school that I had free time at home suddenly, because I chose to be a stay-at-home when they were young. And that's when I thought, well, maybe now I can write something and maybe that will be. So my first effort actually was a YA book that I wrote with my daughter in mind, but it's under the bed and will never see the light of day.
Early on, in your career, you had to write papers, you had to write, when you went to college, you had, college, you got to write. Did you know then that you had a little knack, and did you start feeling like little inklings as you're developing your style?
No, because, essay writing and legal writing is not creative. It's persuasive. It's more research and, argumentative. Or in my case, a lot of my career was writing contracts, and that's about as dry as you get. It did really help me with thought organization when it comes to writing and also with grammar. but it didn't really foster any creative writing learning.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I mean, but it one thing leads to another. Like, you never know what.
Exactly.
Where
it was great building. Yeah. Great building block. And I always credit my first career with making me a better thinker. And I think that my, you know, book that's coming out and the way that I approach writing fiction is still a very sort of logic based way of storytelling. It's a very realistic, and even though this book has magic in it, it's very grounded in, you know, everyday life. So,
It's funny how you're in this world where, as you say, it's dry and formulaic, but as you go on and you start writing this book, was there like a formula that you followed that helped, you know, keep you consistent?
Well, by the time I read this book, yes. But as I mentioned, it took me a while to get to this place. It took me 3 manuscripts to get a literary agent. So it takes a while, or at least it did for me and for many authors that I know now, to really learn the craft of writing a decent story. And so my first attempt, I did sort of on a whim, and I just did it from gut, and I was having fun. And it was a wonderful experience that gave me the bug, but I had a lot of learning. So then I started joining writing associations and taking classes and workshops and going to conferences to try to learn how to do it better, how to do it well. And like I said, it wasn't until my 3rd manuscript that I was able to get a literary agent to represent me. So so by the time I wrote this book, yes, I had learned what to do, and I had approached it with a plan in mind, you know, with some knowledge, which helped.
I mean, that's what you said. Like, that's very interesting. You, this was a growing process, and, you know,
for sure.
What is one thing that you learned early on? I mean, you wrote your first script, you got it out there. What was that one of the first things you learned in joining these organizations that could be helpful to someone else?
Patience is the primary thing. I think one thing that I see, particularly over the past, you know, decade within the publishing industry, is that because self-publishing makes it really easy to put out a book. When I say easy, I mean once you finish the project, you can just put it out there yourself. A lot of people get impatient and they think, "Oh, this is so good, and I love it so much," so they put it out there. Or they want instant feedback. But what I learned, because I did not want to self-publish, and I wanted the team of an agent and a publisher with an editor and an art director and all of that. So I had to withstand a lot of rejection. I had to withstand a lot of, you know, learning curve and editing and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that it would behoove most people who want a real career, if you just have a book that you want to put out, a memoir or something, and you don't have the patience and you want to put your memoir out, great. And there's a lot of indie authors out there who are doing a great job and do all the right things and hire all the right support and like the control of being the independent author. But for a lot of people, they're just pulling the trigger too soon and shooting themselves in the foot by putting out a not quite ready project. I thought that first book was great when I finished it, but, you know, I failed to get any interest. And as I started taking classes, I saw what all was really wrong with it. And so I just think patience and commitment are the biggest things. But also, obviously, there's a lot to craft. I can't give a neat soundbite to that. There are just so many things to learn. And I'm still, you know, I'm still learning. I will always be learning. I think that's what this career is always learning about what you can do and who you are and what you want to say.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario here with Harper Ross, The Unwritten Rules of Magic. a great book. Can't wait to read it. One of the descriptors was the Gilmore Girls. For those who...
Well, they're comparing it to that because of it, you know, well, I have to be honest, I did not watch the Gilmore Girls, but PR people keep saying, oh, it's like the Gilmore Girls. I can't say that for sure, but, you know, there is an element of magic in this book, and it's set in a small town in Connecticut, and it has, you know, multi-generational story with three generations of women in a family. So from those perspectives, perhaps it's Gilmore, you know, Girls. It got the feel. Yeah, it's got a feel of the Gilmore Girls, I guess. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Gilmore Girls, so yes, I get it. I mean, but I don't know if you have a lot of coffee shop in yours, because they're always at a coffee shop.
I do not. It's I suspect that my story's a little heavier than some of the things in the Gilmore Girls, but again, I can't really speak to that very fine. Well. But yes, you know. So
one thing you touched on earlier was personal growth. That you've seen. Have you seen you grow between your first inkling in writing to this project? And what was outside of patience and commitment, what was there personally for you?
Well, for sure, I've grown as a writer and as a woman, right? Because time has passed, and my children have grown, and my marriage has gotten, you know, deeper and older, and my parents have gotten older. One has died, and so all of the experiences that we go through in life find their way onto the page in some form or another, if at least in my case, writing commercial fiction that is domestic based, right? It's a family story. And so as I've grown and learned from my mistakes and my successes, so too those lessons or themes show up in the story. And similarly, by, you know, taking seriously learning the craft, my writing has gotten stronger and more concise and more powerful, hopefully, or at least in my opinion, it has, from those early attempts to this book that's coming out later this month.
Now, what is your secret to writing? Because some people like the coffee shop atmosphere, some people like the quiet corner in their house. And what works for you?
I'm definitely a quiet corner person. I do create instrumental playlists. I like moody instrumental music, often featuring some of my favorite movie soundtracks, like and composers like Ennio Morricone or John Williams, or, you know, whatever. So because those pieces tend to have a lot of emotion behind them because they're made to enhance the scene of a movie. And I find that particularly if I'm trying to write a more dramatic or emotional scene, and I have quietly in the background some of those emotional songs playing, it will help me sort of stay in a flow and a state of mind to try to bring that emotion to the page. It's really hard. That's probably the hardest thing, I think, in writing is trying to bring that emotion onto the page. To find those right words and the right action and everything that actually elicits a response in the reader. And with, you know, in the movies, they do have the benefit of the visual aids and the music to go along with the dialogue and action, but on a book, we don't. But for me, listening to the music makes me feel like I'm tapping into something that will help me get there.
When you write certain segments, as like, and in life, we have to like choose an emotion, right? When you're going into something, do you do that personally? Like, do you choose an emotion that you personally delve into as you're writing a portion of your book?
No, I mean, I try to focus on what the character is facing in any one scene. So in any one scene, you'll have an arc, right? What does the character want? What is the obstacle standing in their way in this scene? You know, what are the stakes? What if they don't get what they want? And how does the scene end? Are they closer to it, but with a twist? Or did they fail and have to try again? So the emotions you know, that drive, their motivation in that scene, and that they would feel in the face of failure or success, but with a twist, you know, like the emotions have to come from what the character is facing. But yes, you know, obviously I've experienced a range of emotions in my life. So I will tap into, have I experienced something similar? You know, now this book again has magic in it. So it was a little harder in some cases, you know, to bridge that divide. And because, of course, I've never experienced magic. But yes, I do tap into my own experiences. But on the page, it really has to be very centered in the character's state of mind.
I'm assuming you read plenty of books in your life.
Yes.
As you know, as watch a lot of movies from what I understand now.
I love movies, yeah.
Well, then let's go part one. Your favorite book or author?
Oh, favorite book. That's like an impossible question. But one that usually leaps to mind quickly for me is Jodi Picoult and her, it's an older book, Her Sister's Keeper. And it was such a powerful, amazing story, and I don't know if you've read it, but it's essentially the story of a 13-year-old girl who wants to be emancipated from her parents. She was born to be a donor child for her older sister who has leukemia, and the story is told through five points of view: the mother, the father, the daughter who wants to be emancipated, the guardian assigned to that daughter, and I believe the middle son who feels ignored by in this whole process. And the ending is very powerful, and it's a real tearjerker of a book, but it also asks just such big questions about life and love and sacrifice and right and wrong, and it's really an amazing story.
And since you love movies, what movie sticks out for you, or do you have like a top three that you like rewatch?
I'll give you a top three just because they're varied. One of my all-time favorite movies will always be When Harry Met Sally, because it's, to me, the pinnacle of rom-coms. Every single line of dialogue matters and delivers more than just the direct dialogue. There's so much subtext and humor in that movie, and it's just so well done, and it's not predictable, and it's not, you know, you don't have like the young, beautiful, sexy characters. You have very realistic kind of characters. I just love that movie. Shawshank Redemption stands out as another fantastic movie for the drama of it, for the discomfort of watching this guy suffer injustice the way he did, but then prevail at the end. Is such a satisfying ending to that movie. And then I'm trying to think there's so many movies. I got to try to think what my third one would be. For sheer like creepy vibes, I still love The Shining, which is again another old movie, but what, you know, what's that called? Like not closed door, but like when you're stuck in one place, locked room type of sort of horror thriller. And Jack Nicholson's just so fabulous in that. And it was just so, scary in its own way. So those are, you know, I loved those movies.
The writer in you leaks out since two of those three movies are based on a novel.
Yes. And When Harry Met Sally is Nora Ephron, who is also a writer. So
there you go.
Wrote that, I think.
All three.
Yep.
Adaptation. This is The Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario. This is 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. And this is Harper Ross. We're talking about the unwritten rules of magic, or journey through this book writing journey. So here's a fun question. You have characters in your book, right? If there's an adaptation of your book to a film, who's going to be the lead role?
Now this is funny because I've actually thought about this, even though it will never happen, but I think I would see Rachel McAdams as the main character, Emerson, who is 40 years old in the movie, in the book, and is the only point of view character. It's the whole book is told from her point of view. So I would see her. And then for her mother, who's in a prominent character, I thought of Sharon Stone. And then I didn't really know, I can't really say for the daughter, her daughter Emerson, 17, because I honestly, I don't know a lot of the names of the younger actresses these days. So I don't know for that one.
It's interesting because many writers say they see a movie as they're writing. Like, you actually have to envision, there's not much of a difference between a movie director and a writer, because you're actually seeing these characters interact in your mind as they're going. Is that true for you?
I definitely do. My children have actually laughed at me because apparently when I type, my face gets very expressive and my head bobs around like I'm acting out what I see in my head, like how the characters are, their body language. So I'm not even aware of that. And I do think that for sure, a lot of writers I know are very visual when it comes to their writing, and they see the scenes and they see the action happening. The only difference I would say is, you know, a director doesn't have to be as into the internal thoughts of a character as in a book. You know, you really have to have a little bit more of that going on, whereas the actor interprets that stuff on the screen. So
when you're writing, right, and this is very interesting when you say character development and knowing the intricacies of the character, do you plot out your characters and write down everything about them, their backstories and everything, or do you free write as you go right along, I should say?
No. I definitely plot everything out, particularly the characters, because I would say my story and prior books have been character driven. And you can't, like I just said, when I was talking about scenes and having to know, like, what's motivating the character, what do they want, why do they want it, what's in their way, you can't know that if you don't know your character. And if you just start with plot or a cool premise and you don't know who your character is, it's going to feel very superficial, and it's going to feel a little bit what I would say is called plotsy, like, you know, like you're making the character fit into the plot versus having the character drive the plot. So I definitely do like character background, you know, Bibles or whatever. So I know them, I know their backstory, what has hurt them in the past, what they're afraid of and what they want. And I go from there, but I also am a plotter. So I will have a pretty decent outline before I start writing. And so almost scene by scene, not quite, but almost. But of course, you get to know your characters even more as you get into the book. So often I will start with an outline, and that's not necessarily where I don't necessarily stick to it. If I realize partway through, this isn't how this character would respond, I need to rethink this or whatever. So things can change, but I do start from a place of knowing.
Very interesting how all this, you say that formulaic writing in your early years has snuck into this very well-organized writer that you've become.
I told you.
One thing does lead to another. Contracts in book and, you know, fiction writing do have its tie-ins. What should a fan or a person reading this book expect?
Well, like I said a little bit ago, I think that this book is very much grounded in realistic things. This story is about a ghostwriter whose father has just died, and she had a complicated relationship with him. And the magic is that he had this good luck charm that he kept locked away and forbade anyone to touch. Well, you know, after his funeral, she steals it. It's a vintage typewriter. And when she starts typing on it, she learns that what you type comes true. So she starts using it to try to fix her life. Her mom is an alcoholic who is making hasty plans that scare her. And her daughter is a teenager who she can tell is hiding some big secret, and she doesn't know what it is. So it's, you know, like I said, too, she's 40 years old, single mom, you know, grieving a complicated relationship that had unresolved issues when he died. He had Alzheimer's also. And so you're dealing with a lot of real world things, but the magic kind of gives it a little bit of an escapist. But it's a story about learning to let go of control and to be present in your life. That's really like the themes revolve around that and around sort of family and forgiveness.
Wow. Talking about manifest destiny. you wanted a certain thing for yourself. And you set a goal. I mean, you just didn't want to just self-publish. You wanted to do it the right way. Where did that come
from? Well, not the right way, because it's self-published. There's a good way to self-publish, but a lot of people don't have the patience to do it the right way. But anyway, didn't mean to interrupt you. But
No, continue. But I mean, no. Was that a personal goal of yours always to really be backed by a publisher?
Oh, yes. But part of that is also probably a bit of insecurity, if I'm being honest, because, if I convince an agent that the work is good, and if the agent can convince an editor at a publisher that the work is good, then when some readers don't like the book, it won't kill me the same way. Whereas if I thought it was good and put it out myself and thought it was good and then had readers who don't like it, you know, put things out there on the internet, it would be harder. I would really doubt myself more, I think. And so for me, part of it was just, I wanted sort of to feel like, well, I'm not the only one who thought this was decent. And then also, like I said, I didn't want to have to learn the business side of this career. I didn't want to have to learn how to do, you know, ads on Facebook, or I'm not a cover artist, you know, I'm not an editor. So I wanted all of those people, and I didn't want to have to come out of pocket for that if I didn't have to.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah. So there were a lot of factors, you know.
My last question for you, what would your advice be to a young Harper Ross in her early years?
Read a lot. Start taking classes in writing, and because you'll also meet other writers there, and you'll start forming a network that will help you along. It's a very pay it forward community, and people who have gotten published are very happy to reach back and help other people achieve that goal. And you know, be true to your voice, I guess, you know, think about don't copy what other people do. Let your own voice come through. Your voice is sort of a thumbprint. Not everyone's going to like it, but people who do like it will find you. So you need to be sort of your own individual in order to stand out in a very crowded market.
The Unwritten Rules of Magic by Harper Ross. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been really nice talking to you.
On sale January 27th, so get your copy. Yes, it's going to be available literally everywhere now, because you can get it on audio and ebook. So something that Harper didn't need to learn how to do, because it's all done for her with beautiful beautiful cover art with the magical typewriter in it. Now I get the cover. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been a conversation with Harper Ross, the Unwritten Rules of Magic author extraordinaire. And like always, to my listeners, thank you for taking the time to listen.
Race to savings now at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Energizer batteries ready for your next project. Power up your devices with Energizer batteries. Nothing outlasts the long-lasting power of Energizer Ultimate Lithium batteries. Right now, get a 4-pack of lithium batteries for $9.99 through February 14th. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on all your battery needs at Menards. Save.